From out of a storm, the Lord said to Job,
"Now get ready to face me. I will interrogate you, and you will respond to me."
"How did I lay the foundation for the earth? Were you there? Doubtless you know who decided its length and width."
"Job, have you ever walked on the ocean floor? Who carves out a path for thunderstorms? Who sends torrents of rain and empty deserts where no one lives? Rain that changes barren land to meadows green with grass.
When do mountain goats and deer give birth? Have you been there when their young are born? How long are they pregnant before they deliver? Soon their young grow strong and then leave to be on their own.
Who set wild donkeys free? I alone help them survive in salty desert sand.
They stay far from crowded cities and refuse to be tamed. Instead, they roam the hills searching for pasture land.
Would a wild ox agree to live in your barn and labor for you? Could you force him to plow or drag a heavy log to smooth out the soil?
Can you depend on him to use his great strength and do your heavy work? Can you trust him to harvest your grain or take it to your barn from the threshing place?
Did you teach hawks to fly south for the winter? Did you train eagles to build their nests on rocky cliffs?
Can you catch a sea monster by using a fish hook?
Can you tie its mouth shut with a rope?
Can it be led around by a ring in its nose or a hook in its jaw?
Will it beg for mercy?
Will it surrender as a slave for life?
Can it be tied by the leg like a pet bird for little girls?
Christ, this morning we gather ourselves around God's fire once again. Like mountain climbers setting up camp at the summit, settling in around a campfire to recall the outrageous stories of the God who leads us through forests, over oceans, across rolling hills, and up snowy peaks. This morning we pause with the ancient fire that has led us on this adventure and consider what it means to follow a wild God. Once upon a time, there was a church that we'll call Any Church. Any Church had been around for a long time, and lately the folks in Any Church had begun to feel like maybe their church had grown a little too stagnant. A few decades ago, Any Church had been known for some of its big outreach projects in the community and for its full sanctuary on Sunday morning. But lately, the people of Any Church weren't always sure who they were anymore. The pews had grown somewhat empty over the years, and the church was no longer known for doing the big thing in the community. And so one day, the church leaders scheduled a Saturday meeting to try to change course. On Saturday, they decide, we'll find the big thing we should do for God, because if we do something big for God, God will do something big for us. And so on Saturday, the congregation met. And two members came forward with their proposals for the next big thing. First came Cheryl. Cheryl showed a blueprint for a giant community center. "I've been thinking about this at home," she said, "and if we build this huge community center on our property, God will send us the people to fill it on evenings and weekends. If we build it, they will come. If we do this big thing for God, God will do a big thing for us." And so some in the congregation called out, "Yes, yes," and applauded. "This is what we need," they declared. Next up was Dennis. Dennis projected a picture of a giant church sign with an LED screen that flashed church announcements, Bible verses, even funny sayings. I've been thinking about this at home, he said, and I think that if we buy a new sign, God will send people. We need to make a statement of faith, a statement that we love God enough to do something big for God. If we do this for God, God will send us more people. If we build it, they will come. If we do this big thing for God, God will do this big thing for us. Yes, yes, called out Dennis's friends, applauding. They'd heard his plan before the meeting. This is what we need, they called out to try to convince the rest of the congregation to go with their plan. And so the congregation ended with a vote. Everyone agreed that the church needed to do something big for God, so that God would do something big for them, but they were fairly split on what this big thing should be. In the end, 45 people voted for the giant community center, and only 35 voted for the new sign. Under Cheryl's leadership, construction on the community center began immediately. But many of Dennis's friends were still frustrated that the congregation had rejected the sign idea. Who will even know that this giant community center is here if we don't have a sign to advertise ourselves, they said amongst themselves. And furthermore, do you remember what happened when Cheryl was in charge of the potluck? There were 25 salads and no main courses. I don't think Cheryl has the attention to detail for this kind of project. And so, as the building project continued, Cheryl was surprised to find that just under half of the congregation, maybe about 35 people or so, weren't really giving to or helping all that much with the project. And so tensions rose. Quiet, mostly unspoken tensions. We're still talking about a church here, right? But tensions rose while Cheryl and others in the congregation defiantly continued to find a way to raise money and complete the project, even with only just over half of the congregation's daily support. And after 1 year, the giant community center was finally finished. The local newspapers and much of the community flooded their parking lot for the grand opening. But after that, nobody from the community came much to use it. Month after month, try as the congregation might to get people to use it, the giant community center sat empty. "We told you," moaned Dennis and his friends. "You should have listened to us and built the sign. That was the big thing God needed us to do. Surely you can see that now, right?" I mean, not to say we told you so, but, well, we told you so. Meanwhile, Cheryl and the rest of the church were confused. "God, what happened?" they asked. "We did this big thing for you, but when it was your turn, you didn't do your part. What gives?" And that is the story of any church. Now, I don't tell you about any church because I think that it's just like our church. I tell you about any church because it represents the kind of dynamics and struggles and approach to planning and expecting things from God that any church struggles with, especially as they enter into a season of visioning. I tell you about any church because any church wrestled with the very same struggles that are so common, they go way back. Way, way back, all the way back to Job and his friends in the Old Testament. Of course, Job and his friends weren't building a church, but their story quickly brings them to that exact same frustration that any church ended up with. To give you a quick recap of what led us up to today's text, Job is an incredibly righteous man living an incredibly privileged life. Until one day, Job loses everything, his wealth, his family, everything. And so Job's so-called friends show up and say, "Let's face it, Job, you looked like you were being righteous, but it's finally become clear that you weren't doing it right. Look, Job, God rewards big faithfulness with big blessings. And God curses big unfaithfulness with big punishments. So there's no way you could have lost everything if you were actually being faithful, Job. Just come out and admit that really big thing you did that was bad." And meanwhile, Job, who almost certainly believed that his wealth had been a reward for his righteousness, and who knows he didn't compromise that righteousness, asks God, "What happened? I was doing big things for you, and you were doing big things for me, just like it's supposed to work. So what happened? Why isn't all that blessing still pouring in?" And then God steps in with this incredible speech, a speech that we just heard some fantastic excerpts from today. Admittedly, it's a speech that I've often found uncomfortable because God at first really seems to be kicking poor Job here while he's down, am I right? Lecturing him on how dumb he is, right while Job's experiencing some of the greatest pain we could imagine. I mean, at this point, although he's sitting at a nice table here in the text, Job is basically like laying on a dung heap covered in sores at this point. And so I certainly hope there aren't any seminaries using this particular passage as an example of good pastoral care at a hospital bedside. But what has redeemed this speech to me over time has been the insight that this part of the story isn't so much concerned with modeling the proper tone for pastoral care as it is there to provide God's response to us when we treat God the way we all too often treat God. The way Job had been thinking about God before his suffering, and the way Job's friends relentlessly treated God throughout the entire ordeal, which was this: that God is a tit-for-tat God. That if we do good things for God, we can count on God doing good things for us. If bad things happen to us, it must be because we didn't do enough good things for God. That God is, to use a technical term that suddenly we all know the meaning to right away, that God is some sort of quid pro quo God. You do this thing for me, and I'll do something good for you. You don't do this for me, and I'll do something bad to you. And so, however uncomfortable we might be with God's tone, the message is maybe one we all need to hear. It's this: so you think I'm a quid pro quo God? You think you get to predict who gets what based on how they've acted? You think you get to make me do something good by doing something good yourself? You think I'm basically just a machine that you can control and manipulate? Well, consider this. You want to pin me down into something you can control? Consider this. Consider instead what a wild God I am. And so God speaks from just the place you might expect from a wild God to speak from a wild whirlwind. And God says, "Hey, Job, where were you when I determined how this world would be measured? Do you know how I measure things? Do you know that I, the one who measures things, roam in the deepest parts of the sea? That I cut channels to unleash rivers into new places? That I clear the way for thunderbolts to escape the clouds and explode unpredictably all over the sky? That I go make it rain in places where no human will ever even go just because I want to grow some grass over there? That I hang out with the pregnant mountain goats in the mountains and then go down into the forest right as the deer gives birth and their baby deer go bounding off in all directions? That I'm the one who inspires the wild donkey to be so wild? You wonder why those donkeys refuse to be domesticated in your cities or work for you on your farms, Job. Well, it's because I set that crazy beast free. I'm the reason you can't tame the wild donkey, Job. And when I'm done making that donkey so wild that you literally cannot even handle it, I soar up to the mountaintop with the hawk, and then I take a nap with the eagle in its nest. In fact, Job, try this. Picture the biggest beast you've ever imagined living in the ocean. Have you ever thought of trying to catch that with your puny little fishing hook? Bringing it home, putting it on a leash for your little daughters to play with? Seeing if that ocean beast has some nice little things to whisper into your nice little ears? Think about this, Job, and tell me, am I a God who is so easily controlled, who you can predict and make to do good things? Or am I a wild God? So, like I said, if you're sick and I come to visit you in the hospital and you ask me, why did God do this to me? I likely won't be, well, let's turn to this passage. But if we're hoping to do some planning about our future together as a church and we're wondering, what is this God like that we're following? How might we plan to be in tune with the kind of God we truly follow? And how might we avoid the fate of a church like any church? Well, then maybe we've got something here for us. You see, whenever we begin to think about our future as a people and as a church, we are especially tempted by the idol of a controllable God. We want to be totally confident that we're taking the perfect steps. We want to be totally sure that our perfect steps will lead to the perfect outcome. And so we tell ourselves that we follow a quid pro quo God, and then we try to make a deal with that God. We say, God, we humbly bow before you to do this big thing, trusting that in your wisdom, you will go with us. When what we really mean is, okay, God, we want to be really sure that we know exactly what we're going to do for this. So we'll do this, and you'd better do that, because that's how you work, right, God? Right? But instead, if we, like Job, really stop to really listen to God, what we might hear may be more like this. Look, I'm a wild God, so just come follow me. Leave your need for certainty behind, and come follow me, your wild God. Leave behind your need to try to control me, which also leads you to try to control each other. Leave behind your need to try to pitch the perfect proposal that will convince everyone that your idea for the congregation is the perfect one. Leave behind your divisive debates about whose plan will most perfectly set me up to give you what you think you need. Leave behind the hard feelings that come from pitting perfect proposals against each other and settling the differences with a close vote. Leave behind your fear of failure. Leave behind the things you do, that thing you do where you feel isolated from what the congregation decides because you worry that it wasn't planned perfectly and you don't want to go down with that ship. Leave behind that thing we all do where we realize that because we suspect something will fail, we start to become that person who might wait to say, I told you so. Leave behind the blinders that get so focused on one project and one outcome that we lose the joy of working together. Leave your deal with that quid pro quo God on the table and get up and dive and swim and run and jump and fly and play with our wild God. Dive into the mess of community discernment with that God. Swim around in the thoughts and ideas of your brothers and sisters in this family, listening attentive to all of them, ready to be surprised by what surfaces. Run and jump onto our family ship. Sail with it into unknown seas. Sail with it into unknown oceans. Sail with it ready to be surprised by how resilient this ship is when we're all hands on deck. Ready to be thrilled by the way we show and build resilience amidst inevitable failures along the way and hard-won comebacks. But more than anything, fly and play together with this wild God. Let's chart a flight path together for sure, and let's enjoy it. But let's also not be surprised if God gets mischievous with us, swooping down to deliver moments of joy and fellowship and communion that were never part of our best laid plans, but that we somehow find ourselves in the midst of anyway. And when we get to those moments, let's stop with our playful God, surrounded by our playful family, and let's play with a wild God. In a world that trains us to fear failure and demand perfection, to control outcomes and try to make God predictable, in a world that tells us that we need the perfect plans to know that we're blessed, what might it mean instead for us to already know we're blessed? Blessed to follow a wild God.